welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show from which you cannot escape because we've got find you. And my very special guest is Paul Carruthers. Why is that music still playing? Come on, AFR, get on the Johnny with the spot and turn that puppy down. Like, any time would be good, preferably right about now. No? Okay, that's nice. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on in the studio, ladies and gentlemen, that is beyond control at this point. A lot of problems and so on and so forth, including a board op who has to take phone calls for the network at the same time as run the boards themselves. So let's just listen to the music for just a few minutes until he comes back and turns it down. It's so complicated. There we go. Okay, and now welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so you had a whole bunch of stuff that you wanted people to Google. Should we take the call off before you finish your thought or after?
Take it before.
All right. Kyle in Philly, you're on the air.
Hello, guys. How you doing? Sorry, Vinny, I'm having difficulty hearing you. You're very low. But I wanted to comment about what you were talking about earlier, speaking about the not giving a trial because they're a financial institution, and secondly, having all the facts and basically a trial by public public appearance or whatever. And if a trial isn't instituted, there isn't a trial, then what's that setting a precedent for? That's setting a precedent for different classes and different laws for different people and organizations and what have you. It's saying, you know, if you die down the street, do a crime, then guess what? We're going to throw the book at you. But if you are in this special group or in this special percentile, then the laws don't apply to you. And once you have that, there is no sense of any sort of government or fairness or whatsoever. So it is, even if they're exonerated, even if they're proven to be 100% innocent, there still needs to be a trial.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, the whole reason why I stood up for this guy was because I was more interested in defending the integrity of the justice system, right, than him. I wasn't defending him. I was defending the integrity of the justice system and trying to explain to people why it's so important that we protect the integrity of the justice system. It's a very finely balanced thing. The minute you allow a politician or anybody with broadcasting power to stand up and point the finger at somebody and say that person is guilty of whatever, right? And they use the media, that's newspapers and television, to do it without allowing that the person they're accusing access to a courtroom to defend themselves, you're in trouble. Because what you're doing is you're playing to people's base emotions, right? You're effectively using the mob, you're using mob rule you're basically delivering the justice system into the hands of the mob, and the mob are being easily influenced and manipulated. They're having their strings, their emotional strings, pulled by the players who are doing the finger pointing. And that's precisely what happened here in New Zealand. And it was an absolute disgrace. It was a travesty of justice. It should never, ever, ever have been allowed to happen. And the people I'm most disappointed with are not the people who actually did the finger pointing or the politicians that ripped everybody off with it. It's the general public who turned a blind eye to it. It's the people who turn up to Anzac Dawn parades and put their hand on their heart and pretend that they care about all the lives that were lost, defending those very rights that we are now happy to watch being trashed and sold down the river by all these idiots who are doing finger pointing and using the media. What they're doing is they're treating the justice system. The justice system has become a popularity contest. And it cannot be allowed to happen because people's basic protections go out the toilet. All of a sudden then, all it takes is for a politician to stand up and point at a sector of society we don't like beneficiaries or welfare beneficiaries or something like that, and all of a sudden people are happy to watch the complete abolition of those people's rights because somebody said that it was more important that we focus on XYZ instead.
Kind of like Guantanamo Bay, you know? No matter, you haven't had no trial or anything like that, so we're going to give you sensory deprivation and do mind control experiments on you. It doesn't matter.
Yep. So, you know, the New Zealand public need to wake up and start actively participating in the justice system in the process of ensuring that justice actually is applied properly and that it's applied evenly and fairly to all people, because that is not happening.
Funnily enough, one of the people who was trying to actually do that exact thing, named Vince Seymour, fighting for a greater court transparency in New Zealand, was jailed for 6 weeks recently because of that.
Yep.
Well, yep. And moreover, facts are not facts, especially in the media. Things can be portrayed any way they want to be portrayed. A truth can be turned into a falsehood can be turned into a truth, and at least in a court of law, although it may appear to be boring to some people, and it might not be, you know, Nancy Grace out there with headline news or whatever, it might consider be boring or mundane, at least it's correct, and at least you're hearing two sides of the story, and it's presenting the fact the way that they want to present it. But you're hearing both the arguments. Now, on a media station, on TV, news, print, whatever, things can be skewed beyond belief.
Yeah, they can. Yep, there's no doubt about that. And it's happening on a daily, well, not a daily basis, but it's certainly happening on a regular basis in New Zealand. So, you know, the thing is, it's up to the public to educate and inform themselves. It's up to people to say, okay, you know what, I'm not gonna live my life chasing the next sensation and only paying attention to anything that I can fit within my four and a half second attention span. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the reason why these guys are getting away with it, because people are just asleep. They're sleepwalking their way through life and accepting everything they're being told. If you know, the problem at the moment is the ones who are winning are the ones who've got the money to have they've got the money to throw at producing the loudest voice. Well, right, the biggest headlines and the loudest voice wins the argument now, regardless of whether it's right or fair or reasonable.
They have the ability to put in front of the population what they want in front of the population. If you want to know the truth, you have to do your own digging. You have to do your own research. You have to get out there on the internet or in the public or wherever and speak out.
Before you can do any of that, though, Kyle, one step deeper than that that absolutely needs to happen? It's the breeding ground for the change that we want to come. And I'll tell you what it is. People have to develop an appetite for the truth.
Mm.
People don't have an appetite for the truth, right? And particularly in a country like New Zealand where, you know, if you're speaking up against the deference to authority in this country is so ingrained in society that it's disturbing. It's really, really quite alarming, because you've got politicians getting into power who know that people won't question stuff, and they're milking it for everything it's worth. They know that for every one person that stands up and says, hang on a minute, I'm going to question this, there'll be 10 that'll come along and bang them on the head and go, shut up, don't ask questions. Don't rock the boat. Don't make the rest of us look like we're troublemakers. And that's the problem.
The people who have benefited most from this system, the people who have the wealth and the people who have the power and the people who have attained status, have the least motivation to want to change the system and change the way things are. The ones who are living in poverty, who are suffering under oppression, whose voices aren't being heard, are the ones who want change, but by the same token, they also have the least amount of power. There needs to be a way to get those who have the ability to present on a large platform or sink large amounts of money into the truth. There has to be motivation for them to do that. What that motivation is, it's got to be a united front on the lower level. It's got to be an idea of, hey, listen, if you're not going to present what we want to see, if you're not going to present the truth, if you're not going to allow us to have what we need, then I'm sorry, but, you know, we're going to vote with our dollar. We're not going to support you. We're going to picket you. We're going to use what little power we do have unitedly against you.
Well, New Zealand has got, I mean, we are, the potential for change is in the wind here, because what we've got is something unique that the rest of the, that doesn't, isn't happening anywhere else in the rest of the world at the moment, and that's Kin.com. And he's announced that he wants to launch a political party in New Zealand, and he's got the financial clout to do it. He's certainly got the publishing power now, the broadcasting power.
I was wondering about that, actually. Didn't he have all his assets and all his finances and everything frozen by the GCSB and all of those scum?
Look, this is the I get really hot under the collar about this, and I'm going to say this to New Zealanders. How the hell, right, can we sit back and allow John Key to use your taxpayer money and my taxpayer money to hang a New Zealand resident or a citizen, doesn't really matter, Kim.com, out to dry, right? This case is a case of US corporate interests, right, being allowed to use the New Zealand... John Key has assisted US corporate interests by using the New Zealand police as a private army to assist those US corporate interests, and he's using the New Zealand justice system, right, to assist those US corporate interests to persecute a guy in a case that is being described to the New Zealand public as a criminal matter, when in fact, in the worst case scenario, it should only ever have been a civil case.
Yeah.
It's a civil case. It's a US corporate interest trying to protect the income of artists, right? That's what this is about. Well, that's what they say they're trying to do, protect the income of artists. Well, if that's the case, then by all means, take a civil case against Kim.com in a US court and let the guy defend himself outside of the criminal system.
Don't invade his house with 70 cops, 2 choppers, 16 cars, and raid through the place when the day before you already sent a cop in who got given a grand tour of the place.
Whoever used New Zealand tax, $1 of New Zealand, whoever authorised the expenditure of even $1 of New Zealand taxpayer money on this wild goose chase, right, which effectively is to help US corporate interests, right? And how they've got away with it so far is they're trying to convince the public that it's a criminal matter. It's not a criminal matter. It is absolute corruption and misuse of Zealand taxpayer money.
If whoever authorised
it should be in jail.
If that's the case, Paul, then it is a criminal matter, except it's not Kim.com that's the criminal.
The criminal is whoever has authorised the use of New Zealand taxpayer money. I mean, you had the head of state services describing the guy that runs the GCSB as an outstanding civil servant. Well, the guy's had to apologise to Kim.com, and he's wasted something like, it's in the tens of millions of New Zealand dollars now, taxpayer money, basically fighting Kim.com in court over this because Kim.com's rights were completely trashed. And that's what we do. And then the government describes that to us as outstanding civil service.
At the same time, when he gives the okay to illegally surveil 88 political activists in New Zealand who have broken no law whatsoever, completely illegally, and has no charges of any kind brought against him.
The whole thing's a scam.
The whole thing. You know, this is the difficulty that we're talking about. Kyle's hung up now. I think that this country, just like every single other country, this is the same thing going on in the United States. This is one global syndicate mafia of scum that are working against freedom and the human race as a whole.
New Zealand, I tell you one thing I'll say to New Zealanders is this, right? There's this real thing in this country of it's really nice that most of you want to give other people credit. You know, it's a nice thing. It comes from a good place, and I understand all of that. But the problem is, it's called suspension of disbelief. It's like when you're presented with evidence that pure scumbaggery has gone along, the problem is that most people then go, no, they couldn't be that bad. Oh, no, John Key wouldn't be that bad. But David Cunliffe's so much nicer than John Key, he wouldn't be that bad. And this is the problem you get. Those people know you think like that, and they're milking it for everything it's worth. Wake up, right?
we've become so dumbed down, so complacent. I was just talking to a mate of mine yesterday about the America's Cup, bro, and I was just like, you know why people don't wake up to the New World Order is because they're plugged into the America's Cup, they're plugged into the World Cup and so on and so forth. When the World Cup festival of rugby came here, it was right in the middle of an election season. And guess what? Right at that election, we had the lowest voter turnout since 1886 when even women weren't able
to
vote.
An example.
I don't think that's a mistake.
You watch Facebook. Now, if we win the America's Cup, watch what happens. Because if we win it this weekend, it'll be timed with John Key's visit to Balmoral and the Queen, and it'll all be hyped up in the media. And you watch what they'll do. I'll guarantee you this. Somehow or another, as if by magic, the media will sort of morph the winning the America's Cup into John Key's visit with the Queen. And then what'll happen is all of his supporters will go, oh, yeah, John Key, the Queen, America's Cup, all at the same time, yeah, New Zealand, yeah. They'll morph it all together, and John Key will be infused. People will infuse this guy with all these magical powers, and they'll somehow equate John Key visiting the Queen to us winning the America's Cup. And it will just go on and on and on. And nobody will actually think about the facts, which are completely unrelated issues, right? But you watch what happens. You'll actually watch people morph these two issues together and turn it into some kind of magical story that actually doesn't have any basis in reality.
Yeah. John Key is New Zealand now. You know, have you noticed that?
Yeah.
He's like our dear leader.
Yeah. I mean, the media have him. They're very clever. They have him on every day solving a little problem. Oh, but John Key says that that's not going to happen, so we're all safe now. John Key says, don't worry, if that happens, we're going to step in and do this. So, oh, that's all right, we're all safe again, now we can relax. And they do this on a daily basis. You end up to the point where a lot of people think we can't live without him.
30 seconds. Yeah, I do think that we can live without him, and we survived for a very long time before he came onto the scene. Apart from the fact that we had the late 80s stock market crash, where he made a huge killing selling off of our currency, which in no small part actually contributed to our currency collapse. We'll be right back after the break with Paul Carruthers, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere.
Did you know that Key?
Oh, we're well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the most operatic 2 hours in talk radio. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, 5 days a week, and with the music that never stops for some reason. Come on, guys, we've got to get that Shiite Muslim together. Welcome back, everybody. My very special guest is Paul Carruthers. Now, you know, something about finance receivership that you wanted to get out of the way we were talking about over the break?
This, I mean, we've gone all over the place and covered a whole lot of things in this show, but I want to go back to the South Canterbury finance issue, right? To those of you who are interested in it, right? If you've got a pen, if you've got a pen handy, right, I can give you some links, or I can give you some words, keywords to search for in Google that will get this information, the information I'm about to tell you, it'll get it in front of you, right? If you Google, first of all, let me explain the background of what I'm saying, and then I'll tell you what to Google, and it will all make sense to you, right? When the government put South Canterbury Finance into receivership, right up until the night before they put it in receivership on the 31st of on the 30 yeah the 31st of August 2010, mm. Yep, 31st of August 2010, they announced that they were putting into receivership. But right up until that point, all the way through the media, they used the media to continue this ongoing speculation as to whether or not they were going to put it into receivership. They were portraying it as not a foregone conclusion, right? It was still being decided on the last day. And I know that for a fact because Alan Hubbard sat up until 2:37 a.m., the morning before it was put into receivership, with his advisors, trying to get Treasury to accept his offer to solve all the problems and recapitalise it. And Treasury would not accept, Treasury would not accept the paperwork that they were offering across the desk. So they were forced to have to go back to their offices and email it to Treasury so they could get an electronic receipt to prove that it had been accepted. That's how hard Bill English and John Key tried to stop Alan Hubbard from resolving the situation, right? Now, this was the day before it was put in receivership. So you had all the media speculating as to whether or not it was going to need to be put into receivership, and the government was keep playing its cards close to its chest, and they weren't willing to say whether it was a foregone conclusion or not. And there was all the appearance of scrambling last-minute activity trying to salvage this company, right, and stop the potential for taxpayers being exposed to a $1 billion bailout, right? Well, what I can prove to you is this. Go and get a pen and write this down and Google it. Korda Mentha, that's K-O-R-D-A, M-E-N-T-H-A, that's two words, Korda Mentha, Treasury, Korda Mentha, Treasury, South Canterbury Finance, Receivership. If you Google those words, Korda Mentha, Treasury, South Canterbury Finance, Receivership, what you'll get is a range of links that come up in the first sort of 10 Google things that come up. You'll get links. If you look at those carefully, very, very carefully, don't just look at the documents, but look at the links, look at the URLs from Treasury. These are Treasury documents that were made out, and those URLs show the date that those documents, right, were written up and put into Treasury's archives. And what you have, bearing in mind that on the 30th and the 31st of August 2010, the government and the media were still playing the game that it wasn't a foregone conclusion. We're trying everything we can to save this company. It's not a foregone conclusion. It's put in receivership. If you Google those words, you will find that the links will show you that on the 16th of August 2010, the government appointed Korda Mentha as a receiver of South Canterbury Finance. On the 17th, that's the day after they appointed Korda Mentha receiver, on the 17th of August 2010, that Treasury, that's the government, asked Korda Mentha, they basically commissioned them in writing with a contract. They said, we will pay you to write a report describing the state of South Canterbury Finance. On the 26th of August 2010, that's 9 days after they were commissioned to write their report, Korda Mentha submitted their report to Treasury, and it's all there in the links if you Google it. And that report said, oh, South Canterbury Finance is basically buggered, and yep, Alan Hubbard's buggered it up, and yep, they owe all this money to all these people and they can't pay it back, right? So that's still a week before they actually put it into receivership, when they were telling you that none of this was a foregone conclusion. What's wrong with this picture? If that isn't the evidence that you've been scammed, I don't know what is. They actually appointed the receiver before they even made the case for receivership, right? And then they got Korda Mentha to write the case supporting the receivership after the fact, right? And then Korda Mentha produced that report in less than 9 days. How do you do that with a company that's got 30,000 investors and $2 billion of market capitalization? How do you do that? How do you write a report in 9 days, less than 9 days from scratch, even doing an investigation, unless you're basically just making it up as you go along?
That was what I was going to say. There's only two ways that you could possibly do that. Number one, if you're making it all up. Number two, if you'd been doing it for a long time previously, just waiting for the hammer to drop.
If South Canterbury Finance was the corner dairy, right, I'd understand that they got this report out in sort of seven, of those 9 days, there was at least one or two weekends in there, right, and you can guarantee none of those guys will work weekends. So the point is, how did they do that? If it was a small business, I'd understand it, but that was a huge and complex business requiring $1 billion of taxpayer money to bail it out. How did they produce a report in less than 7 days? So it's not possible.
These kind of things take months and months and months to do. Usually like 4, 5, 6 months.
And here's the thing. Who is Korda Mentha? Korda Mentha is a receiver and an insolvency practitioner. Who owns Korda Mentha? Michael Stiassny. Who's Michael Stiassny? One of John Key's best mates. So how does this work? Well, Korda Mentha was the company that the government got to write the report describing Solid Energy as buggered, right? So that justified the government stripping the whole thing and leaving the taxpayer to carry the losses, basically. Korda Mentha. Who was the Crayford Farms receiver? Korda Mentha, right? Who's the TV3 receiver? Cord Amentha, right? Who was the South Canterbury finance receiver? Cord Amentha. The list goes on. So every time the government or John Key wants something to look a certain way in the media, he just gets Cord Amentha to write a report about it. And they either say it's buggered or it's great. One example of how they described something was great was Sky City, who wrote the report saying that the deal for the Sky City deal was good for the New Zealand for New Zealanders. Who commissioned Cord Amentha to write the report saying Sky City was good for the government? John Key, right? And who wrote the report? Cord Amentha. So Solid Energy, Sky City, South Canterbury Finance, Crayford Farms, TV3 receivership, it's all Cord Amentha. What's wrong with this picture? If that isn't evidence of cronyism, what is?
You're thinking about one receivership company that basically takes every single high-profile receivership case in this country who has direct personal links to the current government. That is some backroom deals going on. That is some sideways money changing hands. That is the very definition of corruption.
So now, question I've got for you, all you people out there that support David Cunliffe and the likes and the idiots like Martin Bradbury, is where the hell has David Cunliffe been throughout all of this? Have you heard a word from him about it? Does he operate in a vacuum, right? Does he not have any... Does he not privy to any of this information? I mean, if I've managed to figure all this crap out sitting at home, Googling it on my laptop, what's David Cunliffe been doing for the hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxpayer money that we're paying him, right? Is this guy deaf, dumb, and blind, or is he only able to see and hear the things that he wants to see and hear? This stuff is huge. It's really important to New Zealand voters.
This is like the shadow government.
And they're totally asleep on it. So my question for you, Martin Bradbury, for your lover boy, David Cunliffe, right, is where have you been all this time, guys? Where have you been? Why aren't you raising any of these issues, right? You guys cherry-pick the issues that you want to kick up a stink about because it's all strategically done to look a certain way to everybody. You're all on the bloody take, right? If David Cunliffe gave a toss about corruption and in New Zealand, and if he gave a toss about what really matters to taxpayers, he had a challenge, John Key, on every single one of these issues. And where has he been? Silent.
And talking about that recently, he's just been saying, oh, it's crony capitalism because you're not taking away any of the fishing rights for the commercial fisheries while taking it away from the... I mean, it's like you talk about, you know, like the tiniest... Have you heard of the term Johnny come lately? And Johnny come not too... done too frickin' much?
I mean, what are the public saying, really? What are they saying? Oh, well, we don't really care if you rip us blind for $1 billion here and there. We don't even care if you're dishonest. Just make sure we're allowed to catch fish. You know, I mean, wake up, people. What's really important?
Yeah.
These people are absolutely rotting you with your own money, and you're all sitting there going, David Cunliffe will save us? Well, guess what? He hasn't yet, so what makes you think he's going to?
Yeah. It's like the Cancer Society. How long they've been running, 25, 30 years or whatever? How many cancer cures they come up with? None. If you were a builder and I went up to you and said, okay, how long have you been a builder for? Oh, like 30 years. How many things have you built? Nothing. Well, do you think that the guy's just full of crap or whatever? And that's precisely the same kind of methodology that we're working at here with these politicians. They're in the game. They've been in the game for a long time, had massive alleged failure, maybe even it was deliberate, like after one after the other, and still nobody has any clue because they're all compressed into a soundbite. You cannot get this kind of information compressed into a time frame that short. New Zealanders need to develop a much longer attention span in order to
you
get
do.
This kind of information in there.
Your problem is, most of the people out there, is you don't want to think. What you want is someone else to do all the thinking for you. You just want to elevate someone to a position to take, you know, to do all the talking and do all the thinking and then report back to you in sort of something that takes about that long so that you can easily digest it and not have to think and then just tune into your next sensation like the America's Cup or something. That's what's allowing you to be ripped blind. You need to start analysing this stuff more carefully and thinking more critically, right? Start thinking. Stop elevating other people to positions they haven't earned to do all of your thinking for you, right? They get exposed to bankers and oil companies who offer them big fat bribes to sort of say nothing and do nothing and report back to you what they want you to see, and they just all end up on the take, right? Probably the only MPs at the moment in Parliament who aren't really on the take would be the odd Labour MP and probably a fair chunk of the Green MPs, and that'd be about it if you're lucky. Mm. That's why I'm supporting Kim.com, because he's just a fresh wave of energy without those agendas. And why is he going to side with the very people? Why is he going to take bribes from the very people who've been busy trying to
destroy him
for the last little while? Right, he's going to wipe every single one of them off the plate, and that's exactly what needs to happen for this country.
We need somebody who's been painfully discriminated against at the hands of the corrupt scum that run this country in order to fight back against them in a public manner. You can't have somebody who's always been, you know, perfectly happy, living the high life, living in Herne Bay, Parnell, or whatever, who has never really suffered at the hands of the establishment to try and change it.
I mean, I've been described as a conspiracy theorist and a nutter and all sorts of other stuff for defending Alan Hubbard and for digging as deeply into this issue as I have. But I'll tell you this, I'm no fool. 8 years ago, I hit the road travelling around New Zealand to help build a company from scratch. And that company ended up with 1,500 customers around New Zealand. It turned over $130 million last year. And I was one of three people that helped build it. So I'm no fool. I can tell you, I know what I'm talking about. I know how business works, right? And I'm telling you now, you're being had, and how you're being had by Key and Cunliffe and all of their mates are that you don't want to think about stuff. You just want to elevate them to some kind of godlike status to do all the thinking for you, and you're being completely and utterly taken for a ride. So if you want this country to start heading in the right direction, stop buying into those kind of games and those kind of tactics and start thinking for yourselves. Right? Go inside of yourself, figure out what you really value in life, what really matters the most, and anchor that in and act from that and speak from that. The reason why you're all getting blown around like leaves in the stream, you're getting thrown around like leaves in the stream, basically, by events, is because very few of you really know what matters. You don't really know what matters to you most. Yeah. Right? You have to figure out get clear about what really matters. What really matters is a sense of community. What really matters is that we treat each other with compassion and empathy and fairness, right? And respect. What really matters is that respect is a right. It's not something people should have to earn. If you give it to people by right, they will reflect it back to you. If we're all busy making everyone earn their respect, you end up with a society full of people who are just angry and hate each other. And that's effectively what we have at the moment. That's the perfect breeding ground for the likes of John Key and that to come in and just divide the whole lot of you and turn you against each other. And that's exactly what's happening.
Right. Paul Carruthers is my very special guest, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be right back after the break.
Like this. Let's do it. How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this?
Not many, if any. Not many, if any.
How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this? I don't know anybody.
Check, check to the mic, check. 1, 2 from a crew coming through. Are you hype yet? Nowadays, everybody wanna talk, but we got some to scribe. Ain't got nothing when I'm up in the live. It came from when you feeling the vibe. You know, scribe is picking me high. Level with the double bass. Vibration, the place, you ready to break. Y'all hear the man move like an RS. Subaru with the crew, come equipped like a body kit. Lyrically, vibe burn quick. So 1 foot is missed out to his tongue like a steel fish. This skin ain't eggs from the vent when they get to describe. You live like an 05. I got vibe like a beehive. But when I wasn't from the square to the pier by the seaside. Get y'all know the way that we ride around town on the down low. Never know what the flow pro drop, drop. Can't stop hip hop cause it don't stop. Check it out. Check it out. Check it out. Check it out.
What are problems? Fucking ever stop me. Come on, come on, AFR. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Okay, there we go. Finally.
All right, now we've got about 10 minutes to wrap up, Paul, and we've talked about a lot of important issues here. I mean, like, in my opinion, the whole of New Zealand, every single one of us, we've got 4 million residents, 1 million overseas, there's 5 million New Zealand citizens, give or take, worldwide. They all need to have listened to this one particular show, as well as many others, of course, but this one in particular, because of just the length and breadth of the discussion and the exposure of the copious quantities of scumbaggery and corporate corruption that is going on in this country that really subverts every single process that we hold dear as New Zealanders.
Mm. Well, yeah, I mean, actually, on a technical issue, just one technical issue going back for anybody who's been following the South Canterbury Finance story, the Alan Hubbard story, right, who's been following my you know, story, how I've been telling the story all the way through this. There is one point for those of you, you know, the one or two of you out there who really care about this issue. There is one point that I think you should know. There's often what I came up against when I was trying to alert people to what was going on is that I kept arriving at the same point, right, where people would say to me, yes, we understand you're really defending this guy. We understand all of this. But at the end of the day, he had really high-powered lawyers and they never said a word and we haven't heard from them. So if he was that innocent, how come his lawyers didn't say anything? Well, I always wondered the same thing myself. I know that they billed him and his wife for more than $6 million, right, in fees for defending them, but even though they never issued one word in their defense in the public forum. I recently discovered about 3 weeks ago through another source that it turns out that they were actually it's possible that his lawyers were representing Treasury, were working for Treasury at the same time they were working for Alan Hubbard. Now, I don't know if that's a fact, and I'm not accusing his lawyers of that, but what I am saying is I know for a fact from Alan Hubbard's own widow herself that she has she actually went to visit Treasury one day because she was asked to sign some papers. And when she was walking out of the lobby of Treasury, she was very surprised to come across one of their lawyers. And she expressed her surprise to him at finding him there. And he admitted to her that they actually did work for Treasury from time to time. And she went home and basically expressed to me and the other people around her surprise that that wasn't declared to her. So just about 3 days ago, I did an Official Information Act request to Treasury to find out if their lawyers had actually done any work for Treasury in the time that Alan Hubbard, between when he was put into statutory management and when he died. I've done an Official Information Act request to determine whether or not his own lawyers did any work for Treasury in that time, because if they did and they didn't declare it to their client, I think you'll find that's your answer. So for those of you who've ever wondered why didn't Alan Hubbard's lawyers say anything, I'm saying to you that I've done an Official Information Act request to see if there's dots to connect there. I will let you know via Vinny what the outcome of that was when I get the answer in about 20 days. But it's safe to say what I can absolutely guarantee you is if they come back and say, yes, Alan Hubbard's lawyers also did work for Treasury, I can absolutely guarantee you that they did not declare that to their client. I know that for a fact. So that sweeps that one out of the way.
Mm. I don't know what to do about this situation. I mean, let's say if we look at the facts here and just be assumptive about it. Let's operate on the assumptions. We assume that those who are elected officials are liars and crooks. let's assume that the bureaucrats who actually enforce the will of these liars and crooks are also themselves liars and crooks. Let's say that the courts are corrupt. Let's say that the police themselves are derelict in their duties. What can we do about it? And I just come back to the same point. And it's a point that you raised earlier, is that we're always elevating other people to say, oh, it's their job, it's not my job, I've got to do this, that, and the other. And I think the reason why I quit my job is because I realized that this job that I'm doing right now is a frack load more important, because if I don't do this job that I'm doing now, this very important work, there won't be a country for me. There won't be employment for me. There will be nothing. I won't own any. I won't be able to have any custody over my own children. I won't be able to have the ability to have a job that won't just be taken away from me. I won't have any rights. I won't have any due process. I won't have anything. I will be a slave, lock, stock, and barrel long before I ever make enough money to live a comfortable lifestyle if I don't expose this entire corrupt system and get it overturned.
Well, you've identified what really matters to you in life, and you're living it out, basically. You're following your heart and acting out of your own convictions. And that's what I'm suggesting that people do. You know, I mean, I understand there's a bit of I've created a bit of it sounds like contradicting when I'm saying, well, I'm going to support Kim.com if he starts a new political party, when I'm saying, you know, you shouldn't be deifying and putting on pedestals people like Cunliffe and Key and all the rest of it, when it looks like I'm doing the same thing. If Kim.com comes out and starts that whole sort of vote for me and I'll solve all your problems carry on like the other clowns do, then he's going to lose me. I'll tell you that right now. But if he comes out with what I suspect he's going to do, which is what I would do, which is to show people how to empower themselves. Any good politician would teach you to fish, right? Not convince you that they can provide you with the daily quota, right? Any politician who basically tries to convince you they can solve all your problems is lying to you. They are lying to you, right? Any politician who sets up a bunch of initiatives to help you solve your own problems is your best friend. That is the person you should be voting for, right? You should be giving your support to people who are helping you support yourself, right? And that's the paradigm that needs to shift. That's what needs to happen in order for us to start progressing forward as a more inclusive and richer society. And when I say richer, I'm not just talking about rich in material terms. John Key is perfect for all the people. He's the perfect leader for people for whom money is everything, right? If you value people in terms of their material worth alone, right, you're a poor. You are a poor, poor individual. You are poor in spirit. You're very poor. You're poverty-stricken in spirit. That's all I can say.
Let's just say worthless.
Yeah. You know, I mean, some of the best rhetoric I've seen about this issue comes out of the Green Party. I'm not necessarily a Green supporter, but I do like some of the things they say. We shouldn't be measuring this nation's richness in material terms alone.
Did you hear what Russell Norman said the other day, that tax is not a burden?
Yeah.
That's freaking nuts.
Yeah. New Zealand should have a much lower tax rate than it does for a start, so people are encouraged to spend and save. It's just absolutely absurd the way we've got it set. It's actually, there's a disincentive to succeed and run a business in this country. There really is. Yeah. So, you know, what I'm saying is, take responsibility for your own thinking. Take responsibility for your own critical analysis of situations. Don't just take Martin Bradbury's word for it. If you follow that man, he'll just lead you off a cliff, right? I can tell you that right now.
He's a member of the Fabian Society. The symbol of the Fabian Society is a wolf in sheep's clothing. And a wolf is still a wolf, even if he ain't eaten your sheep yet.
Those guys they're only interested in being the center of attention, right? They're not even interested in whether what they're saying has any value for you or not, as long as you're paying attention to them, basically. And that's not necessarily good for you. What's good for you out there is to think for yourself, act for yourself, decide for yourself, right? what really matters to you and what you're going to do about, what do you want to do about the situations we're currently facing in this country? How can you participate? What part can you play? Are you just going to passively sit back and keep elevating other people to positions they don't actually, they either aren't qualified for or they're too corrupt for you to trust them to have, so that they can make all the decisions and then you can sort of sit back for a while and watch how it goes and then decide, nah, this isn't going the way I want, so I'm just going to basically tear you off that pedestal that I put you on in the first place and tear you to shreds and go and find someone else to put on a pedestal and make all the decisions for me. I mean, when are we going to learn?
Every time you put somebody on a pedestal, as soon as that person falls below your expectations, they fall off that pedestal and you're the one that gets crushed as a result because you put them up there, didn't you?
Yeah. The most, you know, I mean, the thing is, every single one of you is the leader of this country. Every single one of you has the power to make a positive difference in your own life and in the society around you. But I see very few people actually claiming that power. I see a hell of a lot of people basically believing that they don't have any power, they don't have that power, and desperately looking for someone else they can give that power to in order to make all the decisions for them. Right, you have to break out of that paradigm if we're ever going to hope to have the kind of society that most of you all seem to claim to want when I look at the way people carry on Facebook.
Well, Paul, thank you very much for coming into the studio today. And ladies and gentlemen, bear in mind, there is no saviour, okay? If you're looking for a saviour...
You're it.
That's right. Look in the mirror. And if you're looking for the cause of all the country's problem, you are looking in the, you have to look in the same direction. You are both the saviour and your own destroyer. Realise the power that you have to do the good rather than the bad. Paul, Absolutely. Thank you very much. We'll see you again sometime, folks.